This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today is an inspirational tale of survival titled Out of the Darkness. And it's the story of Allison S. O'Reilly, who has been a survivor of a health crisis. And I'll let her explain what that was. And I welcome to the program Allison O'Reilly.
Thank you very much. I had a massive brainstem stroke, and with that occurred a locked-in syndrome. That locked-in occurs in 1% of strokes, and mostly people will pass away. They don't know why it occurs, and I was locked in for 2.5 months. All I could do was blink my eyes. So quest everything that you were talking to me was referenced in a question so I could blink my answers.
And the locked-in syndrome is another way to describe that would be almost semi-comatose. Would that be correct?
That's correct. It's kind of like you're buried alive. You know everything that's going on, but you have no way to communicate or move any part of your body but your eyes.
You have mentioned in your book, and for our listeners, you were not a person that was beyond middle age. You were a young person, relatively speaking. Most of us assume that stroke victims are in their 70s, 80s, 90s. How old were you at the time, Allison?
I was 49. I had just turned 49, and I just had a clean bill of health, having a physical 2 weeks prior.
And you are relatively thin, slight in build. It was not because of a bad lifestyle that this occurred?
Oh, heavens no. I never smoked. I'm not overweight. I always went to the doctor every year. No high cholesterol, no high blood pressure, no diabetes, nothing like that.
Anything in your family history as far as direct relatives or other relatives that may have experienced similar fates?
No, they really don't know. They think the only thing I took was birth control, and I was under a lot of stress.
Stress is not a good thing to have in any life, and obviously it's something that we need to avoid. When this occurred, how long ago was this that this event happened?
October 17, 2010.
And you've been in the recovery stage since then. What was the first obvious step that indicated that you were going to come out of this, at least regain some of your former conditioning?
Well, it was music to our ears when the doctor said I was no longer locked in and I could speak. And then things just started to move. I am left-handed, so my left side came back first. And I am very goal-oriented, so everything was a big focus for me to get better and try to get my life back.
You were a director of marketing for a Fortune 100 company, so you had a very successful career, and then this took place. How are you recovering emotionally from that?
Well, what should have been a normal weekend changed my life forever. I am still in rehab 4 days a week. And really just focus to try to get my life back.
This is a courageous story that you've recounted. Who do you think is going to benefit from learning about the process that you have been going through to recovery?
Well, I think three people, stroke survivors, caregivers, and I want to help the medical community. After I came out of surgery, the doctor told my husband I should go to a nursing home because they just are not familiar with younger stroke patients.
One of the keys is that you have listened to your own spirit and not necessarily the negative input from even medical staff.
That's correct. It's with the love of friends and my wonderful husband that helps. And you have to have a positive attitude.
Absolutely. In everything you do, and especially recovering from such a major medical setback or one that's a challenge that you are going through, there are some key messages in your book. What are a few of those? What would you say is the underlying theme?
Well, I think you have to have a positive attitude. I think you have to set even small goals for yourself so that they're achievable. And I think you just have to keep trying to get better in everything you do. You have to live your life today because you can't take anything for granted because things can change in an instant.
Would you also say that healing is a lifelong process? It's not something that necessarily will occur immediately, but it's one you should focus on as a lifelong process.
Oh, yes. Some doctors say, like, surviving and rehab is 6 months. No, it continues every day I get better.
And would you consider every day a miracle?
Oh, yes. Every day I get up and I do little things all by myself. Things you would normally just take for granted.
The locked-in syndrome is not always the case with stroke victims. There are varying degrees of stroke. Have you shared any information about other stroke recovery aspects in your book, or is it simply focused on the locked-in syndrome?
No, I talk about just stroke. There is a little section about locked-in, but it's really just from my perspective. The healing and so forth that I went through.
If you are in this situation, if you're a listener and have a family member that is a stroke victim, what is your personal observation about dealing with medical staff and medical opinions? How do you approach a negative feedback or negative word from a doctor?
Well, I think you have to have positive people around you. And they're only doctors. They're not God. So I think it's how you want to be, and I always wanted to be better. So I think you just have to take what they say with a grain of salt. Every stroke is different. Every recovery is different. The brain is a very fragile thing, and the stroke just occurs. Everyone is different.
Allison, in your case, what were the beginning symptoms that you knew something was going on that was out of the ordinary?
Well, during that day, I had a pain in my arm. The pain then went away. And then a couple hours later, I had terrible dizziness. The room started to spin. My ear was ringing, and I was nauseous. Most people talk about headaches, but I never had a headache.
Most unusual. That would have been the first concept I had. My dad suffered a stroke, which eventually took his life. And the initial stroke symptoms were a severe headache. So that's in itself unique. There was no pain in the head or no headaches in this particular instance.
None, but you know your body and you know something isn't right. So I reached out to my neighbor as my husband was traveling. And they came over and thought I was having a heart attack and took me to the hospital.
Very fortunate to have neighbors that are responsive and receptive to your needs.
Yes, the fact that they were there, the fact that I had the wherewithal to call. You know your body and you know if something is not right.
Anything positive that's come out of this process of going through the ordeal of coming out of the darkness?
I just think you really know people really, they love you for who you are. Your friends and family, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I will never get my old life back, but I am living my new life to the fullest.
And the key is you are not giving up and have not given up. There probably were some other individuals that were there to help you through the journey. Was there anything or is there anyone that you want to highlight that really you're happy they were there? They helped you discover some forward progress in your ordeal.
We don't have a lot of family. Actually, 1 week after I had the stroke, my mom passed away.
Wow.
So it's really my husband and my friends. They are the family that we choose.
You also had an interaction with a rabbi in the hospital.
Yes, but he scared me because I thought I was going to die. I thought he was there for my last rites because, remember, I was locked in.
That's right.
And so I got a scary face, and so they sent him out of the room. When I was in ICU, I didn't really like a lot of people around me, especially men for some reason. I became very agitated.
Tell me in a couple of words a way that you would introduce this book to someone and give them a reason for purchasing it or reading it.
Inspiration, just knowledge, hope, determination, will, just the fact that you can be better and overcome challenges and not to take little things for granted.
It's remarkable that you've completed this book, which is about 100, almost 150 pages. How long did it take you to complete this, and what was the process, Allison?
It took about 9 months, but it was very therapeutic. Because, as I said, I remember everything. And it was a goal that I had, was to write the book by stroke month, which is in May. And I want people to know, because like you, when people think of stroke, they think of older people and limitations. And I just want to elevate the conversation, because stroke just happens, and that when it happens to everyone involved, friends, family, everybody, husband, spouse.
And it also can happen to a younger person than what we imagine.
Oh, yes.
Allison, another part of your book that I do enjoy is the photos that you've included of family and vacations and other activities that you're involved in. Were there any unusual challenges in getting your book into print?
No, I knew what my story was. And when I was going through it in the hospital, even my doctors would say, oh, this is really good, the way I had people visiting every day. And they thought that was very good for recovery. Just to know you're not going through it alone.
Allison, thank you for sharing your story. The title again of the book is Out of the Darkness, an inspirational story of survival in the face of stroke and locked-in syndrome. Author, Allison S. O'Reilly. Allison, where can our listeners get copies of this book?
My website, outofthedarknessbook.org, and it's also available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and many others. You can find it through just Googling me.
Allison S. O'Reilly, stroke survivor. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story, Allison.
Thank you very much.
My guest today again has been Allison S. O'Reilly. For Indie Book Publishing Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Six of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today I have a book to share with you titled The Crossroads of a Wonderful Life, Treasured and Not-So-Treasured Memories, authored by George Quigley Langstaff, Jr. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
Delighted to talk with you. You mentioned you are in Florida in the United States of America, enjoying the view of a nice, beautiful, tranquil lake. Why did you decide that you wanted to share your story, The Crossroads of a Wonderful Life?
Well, it goes back to my deep interest in my family and its history. And I published a book written by my great-grandfather, Quintus Quincy Quigley, about his life. It was his journal that he maintained, and that went over well with the family and friends. And while I was on the board of an English company, I spent a lot of time searching for the Langstaff family roots and found the very cottage they built in the early 1600s before immigrating to America. And all of that resulted in my thoughts about what am I going to leave for my family. And that's what motivated me to start this process.
A lot of us, as we reach 39 years of age or older, start thinking about those legacy questions that come to mind. Of your story that you have told, now one thing that I did recognize is that you, like many of us, have married up and have an exceptionally tolerant and long-suffering spouse. Would that relationship possibly be under the wonderful life section that you've written?
Well, you upstaged me, because I was going to say that as the most important crossroad of my life, but I'm going to tell you now. I was in the Navy during WW2 and was transferred to a unit in University of South Carolina, and I didn't know anybody, and I went to the YMCA one day at noon, and there was this bunch of kids dancing and singing and flirting, and a girl over in the corner was playing the piano, and she was good, but I didn't meet her. And couple of months later, I had a blind date set up for me by my roommate. And when I went to pick up his blind date, who walks out but the girl at the piano?
Wow.
And we started dating while I was still assigned there. And we've been together for 68 years.
Incredible.
She's beautiful. She's smart. She's a wonderful mama and a great wife.
Apparently you were in elementary school when you met the young lady that became your wife.
I was actually 19.
I've been
in the military for about a year at that time.
That's a great legacy just in itself. Describe the process of writing this book. Was it necessary to sit down in a quiet room and reflect over all of your life in order to come up with the details that you've shared? If I were to look simply at your business efforts and the career positions that you attained, but this is a personal story. How did you come up with the details that you wanted to share?
Well, after deciding I wanted to do something, I spent the better part of a year trying to define what were really the crossroads. You know, you could have done this, but you did that. Well, what difference did it make to you and to your friends and family? And after I got those outlined of what I thought were the most important ones, then I just started quietly by myself, you know, not telling anybody, just started writing it. And I spent about a year writing the words, and then I let some of my family in as editors, critics, etc. And finally, one of our new granddaughters-in-law decided she needed a little job, and so she was my secretary, and she typed it up, and so that's how we got started. It took about about 2 years.
Something that strikes me, and I think this is important as I think of my family legacy and how I was brought up, my father, his history. Your early life, how did it impact your life and impact and form the person in business and in life that you have become?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, I had a world-class parents and family that was well-to-do for my first 13 years, and then was thrown into poverty by the big flood of 1937 that wiped out the company business. And I started to work at that time, earning and saving and half to the family. And I think that's one of the biggest crossroads of my life right there. I was blessed with a pretty good athletic background in high school and leadership background. I was president of the student body in my senior year in high school, and that left me with a desire to lead. And I then went on to several stages in the military, and I got injured in a football game that ended my naval career, and came back and went to a school that proved to be just perfect for me. And graduated from there and got started in the business career, which, if you read the book, it was what you call up and down. And some of it was not pleasant. And I finally wound up leading the industry. I was one of those nasty Washington lobbyists.
Ooh, okay. Now, in your book,
And there's a lot more, but, you know, I'm just kind of touched the high spots and answering your question.
In your book, you mention the importance of faith in your life and your development. Share with our listeners what that entails and what it means to you.
Well, I'm a Christian, and I have been that from the beginning. My grandfather was a Methodist minister. I never knew him. He died before I came along. But his wife was a true guide in my early Christian life. I belonged to a wonderful Episcopal parish in Paducah, Kentucky, with a great leader there, and it's been important to me. And there have been key steps in my life where I truly believe I have been shepherded by the Lord. And at my age now, Well, you'll see in the book, I have had many leadership roles in my Christian faith. But when I wake up today, this morning when I awakened, I said, thank you, Lord, for another day.
Beautiful.
That's what it means to me.
Now, of all the crossroads which occurred in your life and in this book, which was or is the most important one besides meeting your wife?
Oh, besides meeting my wife, it probably was the crossroad at Annapolis. I had gotten an appointment to Annapolis. I was a football player, and I had done well in high school, and I played for the University of South Carolina when I was in the Navy program there. And at Annapolis, I was out for the team, and in a practice one day, I was tackling a guy, and one of my teammates was tackling, and his finger went straight in my right eye and paralyzed the eye and totally blew away my Navy career, which I'd worked for several years. And looking back on it, I believe that second in my career crossroad was the fact that that pulled me out of a naval career and into the career that I followed, and gave me the opportunity to marry that girl.
Wow. You never know what interruptions in life may lead to.
Oh, it's incredible. And you just, if you sit down and start thinking about your own life, or anybody does, they'll come up with things that didn't seem important at the time that became hugely important, or that just doctored it a little bit. And I had a joyous time thinking about all this, and a great time with my family and friends on the first edition of this book, where they saw themselves and so forth, and my family, and the wonderful way we were able to share our lives together. You know, I'm rambling, so I'm sorry.
I don't think you're rambling. I think you're just sharing your heart, which I love to hear. And how do you think this book is going to impact people? Who do you think it will appeal to?
Well, you know, I've given a lot of thought to that. And I think that it will have a major influence on young people, because in it they will see a struggle through life in the business environment. I include in here some thoughts about life and business and money and so forth that I have found have helped me, and I think the young people will enjoy that. I think there are an awful lot of people who will see the struggle taken in a business career, where I ultimately came head to head with the CEO that I didn't agree with. And guess who won? I took early retirement and went on to be a CEO on my own and a consultant to an industry. And I think I've got some things to say to young people who are facing challenges in their business careers and in their faith career and in their family career. Family, to me, we have a sign in our little breakfast room at home, faith, family, friends. And that's kind of the focus of my life.
Beautifully put. Are there scenes in here that, besides just being narrative and telling your story, that are, I would call them exciting? What would you say to those scenes?
That's an interesting question. Exciting?
Well, I heard that there was a George the Spy. Who is George the Spy?
Have you read George the Spy? That was an exciting challenge. That was where I was given challenge of going out and finding out whether we could compete effectively with another company that was very successful. And that turned out to be a huge step in my career. Now, negative was the challenge when in the business environment, where the CEO wanted me to do something that I definitely did not think was the right thing to do, and I challenged him to put that in writing, and he didn't do it, and then he came up with another idea, and I said, I won't name a name here, but I said, okay, I don't think we're going to be able to get along, and I will take early retirement. I was then 55, and I took early retirement. So that was a negative, but it led to a positive with me as CEO of the Industry Association.
Is that in the chapter, Looking Back at the Devil's Roller Coaster?
Yeah.
Well, for those readers who like suspense and intrigue, this section ought to be a wonderful and insightful read. Plus, some great advice for career choices.
Kids like that, I think, will see some other steps that took place, particularly in what I suggest to young people in their first job. And they'll find that in the book.
Is there an underlying message that you really want readers to take away from this read?
Well, I would take away, of course, you can obviously see that family is super important to me. And the potential for creating a close, tight-knit Christian family. And that's important to me. It's important to me to have carried out a career, both in the business sense and in a civic sense, that enhances my feeling about my faith. The scholarship program that I founded several years ago, and how it originated from a boring day on the farm and stuff like that, I think can be inspirational. I hope so.
I am grateful that you've taken time to visit with me today. Now, in addition to the primary story that you have shared, you also have an addendum in your book. And you have just decided, as a fatherly figure and as a grandpa, to maybe share some life lessons. Please share for our listeners a couple of those ideas.
Well, the life lessons are those things that I found that I wanted to share, particularly with my grandchildren, about key issues of life. The business of your first job and how you handle yourself. I have a section in there called Old George's Ideas About Career Selection. And I've shared that with many people, and I think it has meaning to it. And then, okay, so you got your first job. Well, okay, how do you behave? How do you act? How do you show your company that you are an important cog in the wheel? And then we got to manage money, and I have put down the lessons I learned from my daddy and from the richest men in Babylon. And I have followed them pretty intensely throughout life. And I would hope that young people would find that motivating.
I think that's absolutely critical information that you've shared, and wisdom that the millennials, especially those college students who are currently trying to get a handle on where to go and how to conduct themselves for a good and long-lasting career. Sir, this is very important information and wisdom that you're passing along. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Were there any other challenges in writing your book?
Well, I think any time in a husband-wife relationship, when one or the other is totally engaged and it encroaches on other time, there's always that. But my wife is my joy in life, and she has been a great companion. Other than that, financial, I spent a fair amount of money on various aspects of the project. But I think that was well worth it.
The title of the book is The Crossroads of a Wonderful Life, Treasured and Not-So-Treasured Memories. And our author is George Quigley Langstaff, Jr. George, where can our listeners get copies of your book?
We start the promotional program on June the 1st. It will be available nationwide at major retailers.
Excellent. George, thank you for being such a great guest and joining me today.
Thank you.
for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today, by title, asks this question: Do you live on purpose? A curriculum for living. A 75-page motivational read, author Sanford McMurray, who joins me from Brisbane, Australia. Welcome, sir.
Hey, how are you, Jay? Thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you for being a part of the show and getting up early. It's 4 a.m. as I'm talking to you today, and you have a very unique Australian accent. How did that come about?
Well, I actually moved to Australia back in 1995, and came and checked it out, and I said, well, you know, it's not a bad place. So I went back home and told my grandmother and my two sisters I was coming back, and they said, okay, be happy. And here I am in 2014, still here.
Don't worry, be happy. Taking the words of a song literally, apparently. You have a rather colorful career path. You have been a part of music and drama. You've been in the circus arts. Tell me which of those, or are they all paths that you've taken that you found fascinating?
Yeah, it's has been a creative and colorful journey. I first started, you know, and in reference to my book, I first started my journey as a dancer and a acrobat. I went to the Lewis and Clark University in Illinois, and I originally went to study communications, but I quickly found myself in the theater and drama departments, and find myself in the dance class, and learning how to count music and dance music, and, you know, finding all kinds of mentors to help me. My first mentor was Betty Parr. She was about 5'1", and of course at that time I was about 5'8", 5'9", and she would look up to me and she said, "You like dancing?" I said, "Yep." She said, "Well, here's the keys to the studio. You practice anytime you like." So I just kept practicing and practicing and practicing, and next thing you know, I ended up in a school of performing arts in New York City in 1987, and then graduated from there in 89. It was a two-year intensive program, and I started working in theme parks and off-Broadway shows, cruise ships, and in Japan, and that was my ticket to the world, really, and I just kept going. As I said, I worked on cruise ships where I met my partner, and she was from Australia. And she said, "I'm going back home. Would you like to come?" So I went to Australia because that was on my bucket list since I was 13. I said, "I'd like to visit Australia and see if those kangaroos are real." And so I decided to come to Australia. And like I said, I came for a little while and decided to stay.
Sanford, as you were growing up, you had a neighbor named Noel that had an influence on you. You began by being determined to learn to do a backflip. Tell us about that story and how that changed your motivation, your focus.
Well, doing my first back handspring started when I was around 8 or 9. It was that's where the journey began. And then there, I had a lovely neighbor. She was a cheerleader, and she used to flip at all the basketball games. And
I said, wow, you know, I really want to do that, you know. And it was just a thought. It was just something that I didn't think meant anything, that thought. But it had such a profound effect on me. I would try to do this flip in many different ways, try to talk myself into it in many different ways. But I kept finding that my thoughts, my actions were working against me. They weren't positive. They weren't strong enough. It wasn't a must. If you progress many years ahead to about 18, so almost 10 years later, my thought process had changed in it seemed like an instant. I had just got off the phone. I had an argument with my girlfriend at the time. She really, really made me angry. And being a guy, most guys tend to physically punch something or aggressively do things. Well, that day I said, Sanford, you know, you're not going to punch a wall. You're not going to hit something. You're not going to be angry. What I want to do is I want to go outside in my front yard and do my back handspring. That's what I want to do. That's what I'm going to do. It is now a must. All the fear and anxiety just rose up in me as I stood in that front yard by myself, and I said, this is it. I threw myself over onto my hands and landed on my belly, and I said, wow, you know what? I'm not dead. I'm alive. I'm alive for the first time with this back handspring. I'm going to get up. I'm going to do it again. And I did it again, landed on my feet, did it again, landed on my feet, did it again, landed on my feet, and I said, you know what? If you can think it, you can say it, it can happen. So be aware of what you're thinking and what you're saying, and get into it. Get busy living, Sanford. And it was most amazing. It's so permanently set in my mind that's what I pass on to people. It is really, truly that simple. But we often forget. And look, because I wrote the book doesn't mean I'm perfect either. It simply means that I am in that process of constantly being aware of my thoughts and my words, and wanting that to become a biblical truth, if you will, in my day-to-day life, and that's what I want to pass on to people.
You also grew up in a rather rough neighborhood as a young child, too, didn't you, and carried some of that luggage to you. Finally, well, I guess talked your way out of it, but got yourself thinking straight and changed your way of thinking on that as well.
Well, look, you know, I think there are a lot of people that grew up in less than great situations. You know, I grew up in what they call, you know, the ghetto, or, you know, on the streets. You know, even though I did have a home, I had food, I had clothing, I had a family who loved me. You know, my sisters, my dad, my mom had passed away by that time, as you read in the book. You know, and I was very angry about that for many years. Again, not being aware of that in my thoughts. I wasn't aware that I was that angry. But, you know, I don't pretend that those moments didn't happen, that part of my life didn't happen, because they helped to make me who I am and who I strive to constantly be. And, of course, the sort of person I pass on comes from those sorts of things as well. But I don't want to have that as a medal. I was saying it to a friend the other day. People have these things in their life that have happened in their life, you know. Oh, you know, oh, my mom passed away. Oh, I was abused. Oh, you know, I was bullied. You know, I was sexually molested. And they carry around on their chest like these medals from the military. Look at my star. Look at my badge. Look at this. I'm so hurt. I have more than you. Oh, wow. Okay. But why do you want to carry that on your chest? Why do you want to be proud of that? Know that that is an experience. That is something that you have learned here. On what I call Earth School, you've learned that, you've experienced that, you've gone through that. That's great. What do you want now? What do you want now? Okay. Now we have to start being aware of our thoughts and our words, and then those words and thoughts become our actions, because we can't avoid that. We cannot avoid that. So, yes, born in the ghetto. Yes, you know, mom passed away. Yes, grandma dealt with cancer. Yes, one of my sisters was abused. Yes, one of my sisters had great injury. Yes, all those things. But they've changed those thoughts and their actions, and now they've gotten the success that they want. I have the success I want, and still striving for more.
Great.
I still want more, and more for other people as well who come into the radar of my life. And then I want those people to expand and do the same thing for the people that come into the radar of their life. Don't live in the past. Start from where you are and build from there, from the things you say and believe you want.
And the experiences of our life can build a great tapestry if we apply the needle and thread properly. And that's what you have done. Your first chapter deals with what have you learned from your yesterdays, the interpersonal balance sheet. And that tells me that you are looking forward, not backward.
Well, this is correct. This is correct. There is no shame where you've come from. You know, I was speaking to my grandmother yesterday, you know, because, you know, it was Easter there yesterday, and, you know, it was Easter the day before here in Australia, and I called her up, you know, and I said, hey, you know, how you doing, you know? And, of course, we talk about the past because that's what we have, the memories to build from. You know, we have those memories to build from, you know, but we have such a great way of going from, okay, this is what happened to where we built it to, how we see it now. It's not denying the past, it's not denying the pain. It's saying this is where we built it to now, this is where we are now, and there's such a great love and such a great understanding of that between us. And I love that, you know, when I speak to my grandmother and also my grandfather, who is currently dealing with bone cancer, and, you know, he doesn't have much time on this particular planet, you know, in this particular life, but he's going to move on to the next one, and we all recognize that. We don't pretend that that's not happening. We just understand that we're filled with love, we're filled with life, and our memories want to be of what did we do with the knowledge that we've gotten from the teachers on this planet. And that's not just people, that's things, that's situations. What did we learn from our past? What did we learn from our teachers? And this is where we draw from every time we get on the phone and talk to each other.
You have built and are continuing to build a great business, Cheer Sport Australia, that deals with the very physical aspects of cheerleading and other related sports. Tell me how that's going and how that got started.
Now, Cheer Sport Australia started from the day I was born, let's put it that way. but I had my first cheerleading experience in 1986. A young lady I was dancing with at the time, she was a former cheerleader, and she said that I should probably get into it because I had my tumbling skills at that time. I loved to dance. I had this energy that you could do anything you set your mind to, of course, from my past experiences. And so I got into cheerleading, and, you know, I did it off and on through my years of university and performing arts school. And which I attended when I went to New York in 1987 and graduated in 1989. So I dabbled in the cheerleading world for many years while going through my singing and dancing and acting career as well. When I got to Australia, I continued to perform and do different things. But cheerleading, that style, what I call the Bring It On style, if you've ever seen those movies, took off here in Australia in 2001. Some of the bodies here in Australia asked me to help create a training course to teach the people here in Australia that cheerleading style. And so I did in conjunction with one of the main bodies of gymnastics, Gymnastics Australia, here in Australia. And then we created a course, and coaches started doing the course, and, you know, more and more people started getting into cheerleading. In 2005, I decided to really get involved in that. So I was retiring from the entertainment industry. I had sort of lost my drive for that, even though I had many, many skills and more to offer as far as being positive and learning from your past. And you know, my language was still the same. So I got into cheerleading in schools, in some of the gymnastics clubs, and still were teaching those things, but I wanted to do it through cheerleading. So that was basically the process.
Well, I've seen some of your videos, and there's a lot of physical strength and activity and agility involved in what you teach and what you personally are doing. In this book, Do You Live on Purpose? Where did the motivation come to write this book? Was it for your class and students, or is it broader than that?
Well, you know, you certainly hit it right on the head there. It is for my students. It was driven... The main drive was to write a book for my grandmother. I wanted to write a book for her because after my mom passed, she took us in. She helped to raise us. She, you know, we all have dreams. We all have dreams, and I believe that she let some of her dreams you know, drift away, and she made us her dream. She wanted us to be stronger, more positive, to change the world. And I feel that my mom passing away is not a bad thing. I feel that anyone passing away is not a bad thing. I feel that it is a point of awareness, a point to say, okay, how much more are you going to let pass in your life before you move forward, before you say, okay, I can do anything I set my mind and my heart to. I can do anything I set my heart and my mind to, okay? And so I don't want to let my mother's passing or anyone's passing or my even the living, I don't want to have the audacity to do less than I can possibly do, because there's always more I can do. And that is one of the main drives for the book as well. You know, I have to put it out there. You know, some people still come to me, you know, oh, you've written this book, you must be the you must know it all, you know, how you must know everything. I said, no, I don't know everything. I've written the book because I wanted something for my grandmother. I wrote this book because I want to be able to look back and read it. I've written this book so other people can read it. Now we can start asking the questions. What do I want? What do I want to be? How do I want to get there? Not, oh, he must know everything, and I can read it and become this perfect human being. Far from it. You can read this book and start building on the potential, the endless potential that is inside of you. And I constantly have to revisit that, and I want other people to have this book so they can revisit it, because we don't make the next step usually without some pain. We don't make the next step easily sometimes. And we must have the bad times, the quote-unquote bad times or tough times. I don't necessarily like using the word bad or good, but I think it's important that we recognize that. And I think, you know, with the dialogue that people have or verbal language that people use, I think bad or good gives them a better image, sure. You know. But we must have the not-so-good times in order to move on. If we want to excel in this life, we've got to have the down times and the tough times, because then we look back again, and there it is. Who are your teachers? What were your teaching situations? You look back and go, I did it from there. I can do it again.
Beautiful. The chapters that you've written all have question marks, with the exception of a couple of them. Chapter 2 is, what do you owe others? Chapter 3, why have you chosen your teachers? Chapter 4, are you a creator of joy? Chapter 5, why are you practicing life? And number 6, why are you so afraid that you feel you must blame, drain, and complain about others and constantly be right? And all on and on. These are short chapters, but they have a powerful message in them. I like the last one, after the book is completed, thoughts and affirmations. Positive thoughts for the reader to take with them on the read they have just completed. Now tell me how you would introduce this book to somebody that doesn't know you.
Hey. My name is Stanford McMurray, and I am a endless provider of potential. This book, I believe, will change your life and change everyone's life that you're involved with. Do you live on purpose? Just read it. That's all I'm asking you to do. Just read it.
Good advice. Were there challenges in writing this book and getting it to completion?
Yeah, definitely. As I said earlier, you know, it is. If you want to move into the next realm of who you are and meant to be, there are going to be challenges. I for many years, had a picture, a belief in my mind that I wanted to be a performer, and I wanted to change the world simply through performing. My words, my poetry, my writings, they all started to form into this. Well, as you can tell, into a book, but, you know, this is not the first book I've written. There's other books that haven't even made it to the forefront, and currently working on a new book right now that haven't even made it to the forefront yet, but that are on their way. I didn't expect, you know, this to happen. I didn't expect to have kids, but I have kids. Why do I have kids? Because they are part of my learning. They are part of my gift. You know, why did I decide to get married when I said a long time ago I wasn't getting married? Because it's part of my learning, part of my gift. You know, we look at these things like they're, you know, well, this is what you're supposed to do in life. This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have kids. You're supposed to get married. You're supposed to have the house. You're supposed to. Well, who said? Who said? That's all a part of your learning. You know, you don't get to control everything. You get these things put in front of you because they are your learning. And then you go, okay, how do I want to work with this? How do I want to grow from this? What am I supposed to get from this, and what am I supposed to give from this? I believe all relationships are yes, the quote-unquote give and take, but that's the giving of the learning and taking of the learning. You know, as one of the chapters said, you know, you don't owe people things, but what you are meant to be doing here is giving hope and receiving hope. We must learn, because at the end of our 80, 90, 100 years, how long we here, do we want to look back and go, well, you know, I could have, would have, should have, or, wow, you know, I made a whole lot of mistakes, but I learned so much and had a great time and shared so much of my love and so much of myself. You know, everything is a challenge, but everything is a gift as well.
Well said, Sanford. And this book is less than 100 pages, so it's an easy read, but it's full of motivation. It's titled, Do You Live on Purpose? A Curriculum for Living. Our guest author, Sanford McMurray. Sanford, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
You can go to Balboa Press. You can also go on to Amazon. You can, of course, contact me on Cheersport, Cheersport, at me. ME.com, and we can chat about it. And I'd love to hear from all my readers and all my listeners, because there's more that of course I want to say that I can't say in an interview at this time. And also, I'd love to hear what they have to say about the book and keep them up on what's happening for my next book coming out.
Look forward to talking to you about that when it happens, because this is a good book and one that people need to get a hold of the principles and apply them to their lives. Thank you, Sanford, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me, and I am so blessed. And thank you again for your time and your energy. You're fantastic.
Fabulous. Well, you are a bright and intelligent individual. That's all I can say. No, that's thank you, Sanford, for joining me today.
You take care now.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.